you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, and welcome back to the podcast. Thanks for tuning in today. If you're a human living in modern times and wearing modern shoes, you'll want to listen up for this one. Our guest this week dropped knowledge bombs and dispelled a lot of the most common myths that I believed around footwear and movement. Stephen Sauchin is a serial entrepreneur who has never had a job, a former professional stand-up comic, an award-winning screenwriter, and a competitive sprinter, one of the fastest men over 55 in the country. He and his wife co-founded the footwear company Zero Shoes, creating a movement, which has helped hundreds of thousands of people live life feet first, with happy, healthy, strong feet in addictively comfortable footwear. The two also appeared on Shark Tank, where they turned down a $400,000 offer from Kevin O'Leary. Before we get started, as a quick note, we recorded this podcast while I was in the middle of moving, so I had to use a different microphone, and the sound quality just isn't quite as good from my end. But where my sound quality lacks, Stephen's knowledge about footwear and natural movement more than compensate. So take off your shoes, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with Stephen Sauchin. Stephen, welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance.
Thank you. Boy, just even when I hear you say that, it just seems like such a tall, high bar. So I'm looking forward to clearing it.
You'll clear it, I'm sure, because I've been using your products for a while now, and we'll talk about that in a second. But let's do a warm-up first, and that is, what are the non-negotiables that you've done for your health and performance today?
Walk my dog in the morning. That's a non-negotiable because the dog insists and my wife is still sound asleep. And I've discovered something. So this is my first time with a dog ever in my life. Same thing for my wife, Lena. And I've discovered, much to my surprise, that I can not only sprint all out without a warm-up at 6 a.m. in the morning, but I can do overspeed training because my dog is faster than I am. So that's one. I'd say it's a non-negotiable, except under rare circumstances. We've got a hot tub, and I'm usually in the hot tub every morning because it just kind of lets my brain chill and gets me ready for the day. And those are my biggest non-negotiables of the day.
Okay. I want to bookmark that for later, talk about overspeed training, what it is and why you do it. But first, the main topic of today's episode is going to be on going barefoot, ditching the shoes, or at least the thick-soled conventional shoes. So if you were to explain the importance of that, to summarize it for someone in, say, 45 seconds, an elevator pitch of returning to barefoot movement, what would you say?
Well, first, I'm not going to tell people that they need to go barefoot all the time everywhere, that they need to run barefoot. Even though I do both of those things and it changed my life, I will not suggest that you do it there. But the simple 45-second elevator pitch reason is use it or lose it. Actually, that was a 4-second pitch. In fact, it was a 2-second pitch. And what I mean is, you have a core to the bones and joints of your whole body and your feet and ankles. Joints are made to let things move. You have more nerve endings in your soles than anywhere but your fingertips and your lips. That's to tell your brain what you're stepping on or in, so it knows how to control the rest of your body for balance, agility, and mobility, starting by moving those bones and joints. And sort of last but not least related to that is, when you do push-ups, you don't squeeze your fingers together. You spread them apart. That's for better balance and mobility and strength production. Same thing with your feet. If you squeeze your toes together, you're losing strength in your feet. If you put arch support in your shoes, the research shows, again, use it or lose it. If you can't use your arches, they get weaker. The research shows up to 17% weaker in as little as 12 weeks. Conversely, there's research showing that walking in minimalist shoes builds foot strength in 8 weeks as much as doing a foot exercise program. And the simplest question I can ask is, when is weaker better than stronger? Don't answer. The answer is no, and never. And related to that, research from Isabel Sacco in Brazil, they took regular runners in regular shoes and had one half of the group, a couple hundred and some odd people, just do an 8-week foot strengthening program. And over the course of the subsequent year, that group had 250% fewer injuries than the ones who didn't do the exercise program, who didn't make their feet stronger. And now let's back up a half a step, pun intended. That same exercise program is the one that was the one used to compare walking in minimalist shoes versus an exercise program. So barefoot or in minimalist shoes, just walking around for active recovery, move your feet, wake up your brain, build some strength, hopefully reduce some injury. That was more than 45 seconds.
That's perfect. Will you define some of these terms, barefoot and minimalist and zero drop and all these?
Hey, I didn't bring up zero drop. You did. So yes, I will. So let's just say a lot of people love to say barefoot shoes. That's an oxymoron. You're either barefoot or in shoes. Like, I agree. Unfortunately, the inner tubes had a different opinion, and barefoot shoes became the thing that people were searching for way back when. So we use that term. And what it means is footwear that, as close as possible, gives you the same benefits, the same performance characteristics as being barefoot. Let your toes spread, low to the ground for balance and agility, super flexible, really lightweight. Zero drop means we don't elevate the heel because that messes with your posture and puts strain on your hips and knees. So, and minimalist is also massively misused because there are companies selling what they call minimalist footwear that doesn't have many of the characteristics that I just described. So they're too narrow. In fact, there's a company that used to call me every couple of months saying, hey, we have a new minimalist shoe. Do you want to try it out? I can't mention the name of the company. Let's just say it rhymes with Narrow. So, let's just say that. And I would say to them, well, I can't wear your shoes. They're too narrow in the instep. I can't get them on my feet. They go, well, do you want me to send you a pair? I go, but I can't wear them. They go, well, do you want us to send you a pair? I go, if you send them to me, I'm just going to sell them on eBay. Do you want us to send you a pair? Yeah, okay, sure. So, so that happened a lot. So in fact, Irene Davis, when she was at Harvard, broke down what she calls minimalist shoes and partial minimalist shoes. And I accused her of being politically correct. And if she weren't trying to be nice, she would have said real minimalist and fake minimalist. She did not disagree with me. So the true minimalist shoe, or the quote barefoot shoe, wider toe box, low to the ground, no excessive cushioning, really flexible, really lightweight, etc. The sole should give you protection and traction, but also that ground feeling your brain needs. It's wired for to help you move your body correctly. The partial minimalist shoes, too much cushioning. And why that's meaningful is if you can't feel the ground, two things happen. One, your brain makes you land harder because it's trying to get that feedback. And the other is it makes you unstable. And when you can't feel the ground, you tend to land with in ways that are not optimal for effective running or injury-free running. So feeling is really important. Some of those shoes, in addition to having excess padding, were too stiff, too heavy, too narrow. But they're still being sold as minimalist because way back in 2010, the big shoe companies, terrified that nobody would ever buy another running shoe again because the whole barefoot idea was catching on, started making shoes that they called barefoot or minimalist that were nothing of the sort. Because, and I literally had CEOs and VPs and whatnot of major companies say, yeah, this natural movement thing is legit. But if we tried to do that, it would be admitting everything we've said for 50 years is bullshit. So they have a bit of a marketing problem. In fact, check this one out. Nike did a study that came out 2.5 years ago, right before COVID. They took their best-selling motion-controlled, padded, arch-supporting, heel-lifting shoe and compared it to a new shoe they developed. It was the React Infinity Run. And the way they reported the results of this study, it was a 12-week half-marathon training program they developed, was that the new shoe reduced injuries by 52%, which is true until you look at the numbers and find the reality. The group wearing the best-selling motion-controlled, padded, arch-supporting, normal-looking shoe, 30% of them got injured, over 30% got injured in that 12-week study. In the React Infinity, only 15% did. Now, imagine going to a running shoe store and you say, I'm looking for a good shoe. And they go, here's one. One out of three people who wear it got injured within 12 weeks. Oh, no. How about this one? And only one out of seven people got injured in 12 weeks. No, don't you have something good for me? And the answer was no. So, but here's the other interesting thing about this study. A, what made the React Infinity Run better? They say they got rid of many of the protective features of the other shoe. But here's the bigger question. If this shoe is so much better, why are you still selling the other shoes? And it's because they couldn't tell the story, really, that getting rid of stuff is better for you, because then it seems obvious. Why don't you try getting rid of more stuff? And then they're suddenly competing with what they've been saying for 50 years.
Wow. So we've only been talking for less than 10 minutes and you've already dispelled a lot of things that I grew up thinking were important for running, such as when I was playing football, I'd have the big cleats And then I put an insert into them, an orthotic into them. And lo and behold, I had lots of problems with balance and shin splints and different things that once I stopped doing that, they went away. But I couldn't figure it out at the time. And I had no idea that it was partially caused by what I was wearing.
Well, there's no way you would have, because you're a young man. And what I mean is that these stories that you need this kind of, you need arch support. And there's a reason there's arch support in a shoe that has nothing to do with benefits. We can get into that maybe. But suffice it to say, we've been hearing this story from big shoe companies for 50 years, over two generations. Once it's past the first generation, it becomes common knowledge, even though it's not true. And my favorite thing to say, prove that the athletic shoe that we have come to know and associate with being normal is not good, is why is there a multi-billion-dollar thing for aftermarket products to make the shoes work better, orthotics, insoles, etc. You would think the shoe companies could have figured this out by now and just built it into the shoe. But the answer is no, because fundamentally, the design of the modern athletic shoe is causing the problems they claim to be curing, and people are just looking to alternate additional solutions to fix something that's already a bad foundation. You can't build a good house on a crappy foundation. And that's what's going on here. And the research could not be more clear. Like when I'm on panel discussions against guys from multi-billion dollar footwear brands, there's two things that happen. One, people say to me, where's your proof? I go, oh, no. For all of human history up until roughly 1970, every bit of footwear looked like ours. Something to protect your foot, something to hold that on your foot, maybe some insulation, maybe a different tread pattern for whatever you're walking on. You guys are the intervention. So where's your proof that you improve performance and reduce injury? And they go, well, you know, that would be really difficult and time consuming and costly. I go, dude, if you could make a shoe demonstrably better than the guy sitting next to you, you'd make billions of dollars a year. And you're telling me you haven't done it in the last 50 years because it's difficult and expensive? Give me a break. In the meantime, they say to me, where's your proof? And I say, okay, cool. Here's 300 studies showing that what you're doing causes problems and what we're doing cures those problems and or addresses those problems. Not by doing anything special, by getting out of the way to let your body do what it's built to do. Yeah. And you guys are getting in the way. I mean, you'll love this. And I'll stop ranting about this in a sec. At the end of one of these panel discussions, somebody asked the guys from Brooks and Adidas, you know, what's next? And they said, well, you know, everybody's a special little snowflake, I'm paraphrasing, and, you know, they have their own special movement patterns, which was them misrepresenting research from a guy named Ben O'Nig. And so we have to make something special just for you. So Brooks was saying they're going to make a special 3D printed custom made outsole. And Adidas was saying they're going to make a special 3D printed custom made midsole. And I just said, cool, where's your proof that that's going to improve performance or reduce injury? No answer.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they're just making it up. Look, they have brilliant, brilliant marketers telling fake stories. And I don't mean to try to jump on the whole fake news idea, but when Adidas shows their Boost Foam, which they released, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, and they show how they bounce a steel ball off the Boost Foam and it bounces better than it does off, quote, the other company's foam, which no company uses, or, you know, cement. I go, that's a really cool thing. You know, when they bounce the ball, the first bounce is like 30% of the height from where they dropped it. But I know a lot about physics, and I knew that there was an exhibit at the Exploratorium Museum in San Francisco where they do something just like this. They have a plexiglass plate with a hole in it about a foot above a steel plate with a concrete underneath it. And you drop a steel ball through that little hole in the plexiglass plate. The ball, the first bounce, hits the plexiglass plate. And then it bounces 260 more times. So if you want to talk about physics, we should be running in steel shoes on steel surfaces, which now you're going to say that sounds silly, but when it comes to sprinting, that's basically what you want. You want a hard surface because that's going to give you the most force production. That's going to give you the best force production. And why is it that, you know, people say you need all this big cushioning where sprinting spikes are not cushioned? It's a very hard surface on a very hard surface, and sprinters put twice the force into the ground that regular runners do, but they don't get the same kind of injuries. So, and they land on the ball of their foot. So what can we learn from sprinters that might be applicable to everybody else? Everything. What have we learned from sprinters? Nothing. So, you know, it's the whole thing is utterly fascinating. Or as my wife says, this would be so interesting if we weren't the ones having to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any physics background, But just thinking about it, do you want to put something on the bottom of your feet that reduces the force you're producing? Like, how are you moving? You're moving right. because of force. Why would right. you want to dampen that?
No, you nailed it exactly. So what makes people run faster is what's referred to as mass-specific force. So if you and I weighed the same amount and we had the same form somehow, whichever one of us could magically put more force into the ground at the right angle will run faster, everything else being equal. We don't know how to make you produce more mass-specific force, but we know how to reduce it. Make the force spread out over time or distance. So the way you make it spread out over distance is by having foam underneath you that spreads out actually it just spreads out the pressure, not the force. But the way you reduce the time is by having foam underneath you, because it slows you down and does not, and just sucks the energy. There's a video I have recorded from YouTube of a guy from Adidas saying, someone's asked him, what's energy return? He goes, well, there's really no such thing as energy return. There's just how much energy you lose because of the cushioning. And we think the boost foam has you lose the least amount of energy. Well, that's cool, but foam is tuned effectively to a particular weight and speed. If you're not a 145-pound, you know, under 2-minute, 800-meter runner, that foam might not work for you because that's what it's tuned for. And so it can make it worse for you rather than seemingly better. Yeah. So anyway, the physics is really, really cool, which is why I did a rant one day about why everyone needs to learn more physics, because then they wouldn't be susceptible to bullshit advertising.
Yeah, I'm going to walk through like my memory of experiences of going into shoe stores, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. So I walk in the door, I talk to some like a very kind gentleman behind the counter who would direct me to a certain section of shoes. We'd go over my goals, he'd pick a model for me, I'd try it on, it wouldn't work for me properly. So we'd try a couple others on. He would measure, actually before that, he would measure the width of my foot and give me the toe box and the width box. I don't know what you call that. To accommodate. And then we'd have the shoe. It's the proper width of the proper length, nice thick cloud boosting technology, the latest and greatest. And then he'd upsell me on a couple other gizmos. Yeah. Such as orthotics, and we'd talk about the different types and brands and everything, and I'd settle on it. And all of a sudden I'd walk out with this, what I thought was perfectly customized shoe for my foot. But from what you're describing, every part of that leads to a worse outcome.
Yeah, I'm going to take a drink of water to get that little bit of vomit out of my mouth. And yeah, literally every step of that is off base in a number of ways. Let's address a few. Like, where do you think he got the idea that, you know, here's the shoe that's right for you? He got that from some shoe company that's trying to sell that shoe. It may be that they're giving him a bonus if he sells a certain number of pairs of those shoes over time, because that's something that happens not infrequently. The one thing you didn't mention, you go into many running shoe stores and they throw you on a treadmill and they look at you at 60 frames a second and they make some assessment about what you do or don't do and therefore what shoe you need. The interesting thing about this is the Army tested this idea of doing some sort of analysis to figure out what kind of shoe you need and putting people in that shoe versus putting people in just one shoe, no matter what, how they tested. And guess what the difference in injury rates were between the two groups?
Negligible.
Zero. Zero. Guess who knows this? The guys who invented that whole idea of doing this sort of gait analysis. They know that it doesn't actually work. But again, humans in general, but I think Americans in particular, maybe love this notion that we've somehow made something special just for you. And so if you can sell that story, people will buy it and then not have a good experience and assume there's something wrong with them because they just went through this whole testing process. They picked the right shoe. So how could it be a problem? Must be something wrong with me. And then they just go back and do it over and over and over. The footwear business has been like the boy who cried wolf. They're the shoe companies that cried cushioning or motion control or art sport. The difference is in the original fable, the villagers get smart. And in our world, the villagers keep going back to the next new greatest thing. And you may have noticed there's not been one major shoe company when they come out with some new magic technology to replace the old one, they've never apologized for the crap they were selling prior to then.
It's just a new, later and greater technology, but the old one still is good, just not as good, at least in theory.
Oh yeah, clearly. But we're going to keep selling that old one. We're not replacing it entirely. And then there's just a lot of misunderstanding about why they do what they do and what the effect is. Again, this goes back to physics, my apologies. But if you look at like the new maximalist shoes, they all have a carbon fiber layer in the middle. And there's been a lot of people speculating, what's with the carbon fiber? And even quote footwear experts, and I'm putting big quotes around this when I say it, again, they don't know enough about physics. One of them said, it's because that carbon plate acts like a spring. Nope, doesn't act like spring because there's no way for it to flex in that way anyway. And a spring needs to be secured external to the load. So think trampoline. The springs are way on the outside. That's what makes it work. And then the other thing, then they changed their tune and said, it's acting like a lever. Well, if you want to think about a lever, one way, think about a diving board. You need a fulcrum somewhere. You need a fixed point somewhere. Yeah. That's not there. So, and you may have noticed that the shoe companies have not come out and said why they use the carbon plate. Here's why, because when you're in the industry, you get to find these things out. If they just made a shoe with that much foam without the carbon plate in between, the foam is so unstable that the shoe will just fall apart in about 20 miles. It's totally structural. They needed something so they could do multiple layers of foam that wouldn't break down as quickly. They still break down super quickly, but not as quickly, but still be really lightweight. And then they say, we built the shape of that carbon fiber thing to let your foot transition naturally from heel to toe. And then you watch Eliud Kipchoge, the guy who ran the sub-2-hour marathon, and all of the people pacing him. And for at least the first half of that marathon, their heels never touched the ground. Wow. So that whole idea was, used or not accurate either. So it blows me away. I'm, as a marketing person, I've been featured in books about how to write ads by telling the truth. And so I get morally repulsed when I watch people in general, and this industry is full of these people, who use very clever metaphors and analogies and misuse physics to tell very, very compelling stories that people believe that are factually inaccurate, and they know it.
Something you mentioned is the width of the toe, the width of the shoe or the box. Why does that matter? Ooh,
thanks for reminding me of that one. So when you put on that shoe that was the right width, did it squeeze your toes together still?
Yes.
Yeah. So then what's the whole width? What's the whole point of width if it's then squeezing your toes together? So you got a shoe that was arguably maybe wide enough at the widest part of your foot. But if it then tapers, I'm going to hold one up to show you. If it then tapers to a point, if it's a pointy toe shoe, if that's the shape of your foot, it's not supposed to be. Your toes are supposed to spread to give you better balance, agility, mobility, just like what happens with your fingers when you do push-ups. If you can't, and also, if you can't use your toes, if you can't flex them, and that's both pointing them down and pulling them up towards your knee, but especially pulling them down, then you can't engage your arch. And engaging your arch loads all of the joints, all the bones in your foot into a arch, a stable thing that then transfers that power very well into your ankle, your calf, your knee. I mean, it basically, if you don't have your arch engaged properly, and this doesn't matter if you have flat feet or high arches, it's the same basic idea. If you don't have that alignment properly, if you're not using that properly, then you're not getting the information that lets the rest of your body upstream use itself properly. It forces your ankle, your knee, your hip, and your back to try to do the function of your foot, which they are not designed to do.
Okay, along those lines, we talked about the shoe. What about the sock? Does the thickness or the material of the sock make a difference?
Yep. Yeah. Anything that gets in the way of you getting ground feedback is going to be problematic. So you can wear socks, just go for the thinnest one you can get away with. That's the simple thing. I it pains me that we started Zero Shoes and I started going barefoot, 15 years ago or so, because I still have in a bag an incredible collection of tie-dye socks. And used to get me a lot of attention, especially if I was wearing a suit and trying to raise money or do something that was, dealing with big people with a lot of money. I'd show up in a nice suit and they catch that I'm wearing tie-dye socks, and it definitely made them go, all right, who's this guy? So a friend of mine, he's a very wealthy entrepreneur, says, yeah, socks make the man, and you want to have your socks make people throw them off guard just a little bit. Yeah, your socks to make them wonder.
So as long as they're thin socks, you can still express your personality.
Exactly. It's not even so much expressing your personality as communicating something that could be valuable in a negotiation. My line, when people talk about dressing to express their personality, I go, there's another option. You could get a personality.
That too.
Let people figure it out after the first sentence that comes out of your mouth instead of looking at your clothes.
Okay, so now we know the right shoes and the socks.
Yeah.
And then the transition. I know when I first started wearing barefoot shoes probably 6 or 7 years ago, that the beginning, it was a little bit painful to start. I went straight from my ultra boosted shoes into minimalist shoes, and I continued training as normal. And then I learned the hard way that it's a good idea to transition. What do you recommend people getting started so that they don't get hurt?
So you've been wearing, I say that pain and injury is optional. In fact, I was on a panel discussion way back when, and someone said, you barefoot guys are going to say that if anyone gets injured running barefoot, it's just because they have a form problem. And I went, yeah, it's all about form, not footwear. And if you've been wearing shoes that don't let your body work naturally, like let's think about this for a second. When you wear an elevated heel shoe, some people have the theory that your Achilles shortens because you're not using it as much. I'm iffy about that. But what does happen is your brain gets used to the fact that you're not letting your Achilles stretch all the way and rebound all the way. Your Achilles is a big spring. And so your brain gets the hint that, oh, this is as far as I need to go. And so if you then switch to something without a heel lift, you're going to be using your Achilles more and you haven't used it in a while. Or if you haven't been using your arch, it's gotten weaker, like we described. So if you've been doing something that makes you weaker, imagine here, let's think of it this way. Let's say you broke your arm. You put your arm in a cast, 8 weeks later, it does not magically come out stronger. Much to our surprise, it comes out weaker and, you know, skinnier. And we look like the opposite of what happened to Captain America. So it's like, yeah, just take Chris Evans and go back in time. And so you would never think when you take your arm out of a cast that you should go to the gym and do 8 hours of biceps curls. You do a little bit just to get that range of motion back. Then you do a little bit more. And if you get too sore, you take a day off and then you back off. Same thing. You don't want to just switch cold turkey because again, partly it's because you're using muscles and ligaments and tendons that you haven't used the same way in a while. So you could be overstressing them. But also if you're using the same form you had when you were running previously, if you're overstriding and landing on your heel, that's going to be problematic. If you think that you're supposed to land on your toes and you reach out and you're overstriding, so your foot's landing in front of your body, but you're pointing your toes, that's putting excessive strain on your calf as you lower your heel to the ground. If you push off the ground, which many people have learned to do, the thing they call toe off, which you kind of have to do in a quote regular running shoe because the sole is so stiff, you have to do that in a way that's not quite normal. If you do that when you're running in something minimalist or barefoot, again, you're putting too much strain on your calves. The image that I like to give is, imagine if you step on a bee, you don't push harder to get off the ground, to jump off the bee, you reflexively lift your foot off the ground by flexing your hip. That's the image that you want to have and that initial motion you want to have for getting your foot off the ground. So pain and injury or soreness and tendonitis and whatnot, I say is totally optional. If you start small, like a 20-second run, see how you feel the next day. If it hurts, do something different so you're having a good time. And the something different is always going to be some form-related thing. Pick up your cadence a little bit so you run at the same speed but with a few more steps per minute. Make sure you're landing with your foot underneath your body. Lift your foot off the ground instead of push your foot off the ground. Those are kind of the biggies. One analogy is, imagine Fred Flintstone starting his car, his feet are behind him, like going, yeah, da, 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 da. And then he never catches up to his feet, or his feet never catch up to him. And that's the kind of idea. You want to think about having your feet behind you. You can't actually put them behind you, but that'll be a good cue. If you start small and build up slowly and you pay attention to, am I having fun? Does it feel good? Then you got a pretty good chance of making the transition enjoyably.
Yeah. Okay. So let's now imagine the shoe store of the future. So say I pick up a pair of Zero shoes, which we'll describe what those are momentarily. How do I know what to pick, what to look for? Like, how do I choose?
So if you're going to go for a shoe that lets your body move naturally, you're going to look at some of those features that we described. A wider foot-shaped toe box. Foot-shaped is the key thing. Not just wide at the ball of your foot, but you know, shape more like your foot. Low to the ground for balance and agility. No heel lift, no toe spring, which is just an artificial elevation of the toe. A sole that you could roll up into a ball that's thin enough to get you, when you put it on, if you went and stepped on some, not, you know, crazy pointy rocks, but some Yeah, well, you could do that too. If you walk out on some seemingly unpleasant surfaces, things you wouldn't like barefoot, you can still feel them and it's giving you feedback and it feels like a foot massage instead of you can't feel anything and you're out of balance. And lightweight is really important too. If you put it on, if the first thing you say is not, wow, it doesn't feel like I'm wearing anything. Actually, you should say one of these two things first. Oh my God, that wide toe box feels great. My toes can spread. And oh my God, it feels like I'm not wearing anything. If you don't say those two things, then you're probably in the wrong shoe.
Simple enough. Tell me about Zero and the whole backstory, how you got involved and decided to start the company.
Oh, because I was brain damaged. We had people who 7 months in they'd been in footwear for 35 years and they were helping us out. And they said, we believe in what you're doing with natural movement and we believe in you and your wife. So we would start this with you, but we've been in footwear so long that we're not stupid enough to try and start a shoe company. And Lena and I both said, yeah, we're hyper optimistic and naive, but that's the only way things get done. So away we go. Yeah. And what happened was 15 years ago, I'd got back into sprinting and was getting injured pretty constantly, like every couple of weeks for 2 years. And a friend of mine who's a world champion runner suggested I try running barefoot to see what I learned. And again, I'm not saying you need to run barefoot, but here's how it changed my life. I discovered that I had a form problem that I couldn't feel in a regular running shoe because of all the cushioning and padding and my toes squeezed together, et cetera. Running barefoot though, good form feels good, bad form hurts. And so I wanted that natural movement experience. By going barefoot, my injuries went away. I became faster. I became a Masters All-American sprinter, which I still am at the age of 60. And I wanted that natural movement experience as much as I could have it. I wanted to not argue with people about whether it was legal for me to walk into their restaurant barefoot. It is, by the way. My wife was kind of tired of me walking into the house with dirty feet. So I made some sandals based on a 10,000-year-old design, some rubber that I got from a shoe repair place, some cord from Home Depot. And then I kept making them for more people because they kept asking. So I made 50 or 60 pairs. And then a guy says, I've got a book coming out on barefoot running. If you treated this sandal making hobby like a business and had a website, I could put you in my book. Well, I've been an internet marketer for a long time. I've built hundreds of websites. So I rush home and I pitch this incredible opportunity to my wife, who assures me that I'm a complete idiot. And bad idea, distraction from what we were doing, waste of time, waste of money. And I said, yeah, you're right. So she went to bed and I built a website and it just took off. So we started selling a do-it-yourself sandal making kit. That's basically all we had for almost 3 years. And then people kept saying, that's cool, but I don't want to make my own. So we came up with a ready-to-wear version. That's cool, but I want a different kind of sandal. So we came up with that. That's cool, but I need a shoe for winter or the office. So we made our first closed-toe shoe. And here we are 13 years later, and we have a complete line of casual and performance boots, shoes, and sandals that people use for everything from taking a walk to climbing Kilimanjaro to running ultra marathons to powerlifting and CrossFit and golf and tennis and yoga. And I mean, literally, you name it, they do it. Because again, we're just giving them some way to give their foot a little protection when they're just doing what they need to do naturally.
Yeah. So I have two of your shoes right here. I think I put about maybe 2,000 miles on these Hanas, I think they're called.
Yeah.
And then I also have this one right here, the HFS, and that's supposedly one of the more popular ones for training as well. How do you recommend people choose a model of Zero shoes specifically?
Well, the easiest thing is go to zeroshoes.com/select, and we have a little shoe finder quiz. But it's one of two things. Is there a particular use case? Are you running trails versus running roads? Are you looking for something casual versus something performance? Do you need a hiking boot or a not hiking boot, et cetera. And then after that, it's some of the shoes have a little more or less barefoot feel. So the soles may be a little thicker or a little thinner. So our Speedforce shoe, I'll hold that one up, is our most barefoot shoe. It's 4.5 millimeters of rubber, and that's basically it. Versus our Mesa Trail running shoe, which has a luggier tread and has 3 millimeters of what we call trail foam hiding on the inside of it to give you just a little bit of extra protection when you're on a trail. Mm-hmm. And then there's some specialized things. So we have a snow boot called the Alpine, or for women, we have some dress shoes as well, the Phoenix, or the Mika, which is a cold weather boot, which is a kind of fashion-y cold weather boot. So, or just, go to zeroshoes.com/shop and look at what makes you go ooh and ah, because they're all fundamentally the same idea, is letting your foot do what's natural. So natural movement is first and foremost, barefoot feel is second, and then use cases, kind of hovering around all that.
Gotcha. And these things seem to last forever. Put 3,000 or 4,000 miles on my last pair. And on your website, you mentioned a sole warranty. And I tested that out to see if you guys actually honor it. And surprise, surprise, after 2,000, 3,000 miles, I was able to get that pair replaced because just a little part of the sole had worn through and it was getting gravel and dirt from the ground trapped inside.
Yeah. So about a year into doing this, when we were just selling a do-it-yourself sandal kit and the sole was 4.5 millimeters thick, maybe 4 millimeters thick, people would say, how long do these things last? And I say, I don't know. No one's worn out a pair yet. So because we were inspired by the sandals the Tarahumara Indians make out of used tires, I said, well, we should have a tire-like guarantee. So I came up with a 5,000-mile sole guarantee or warranty. And if you wear out the sole to under a millimeter thick on the ball of the foot or the heel, we'll give you a massive discount to get another pair, which we've never seen anyone else do. And people say, well, how do you track it? I go, eh, we don't track it. So we're not sticklers about how many. You don't need to show pedometer data, for example. But we just designed the rubber to be longer lasting. Like most running shoes, they say you need to replace them in 300 to 500 miles. And by the way, they're usually crap at about 150 miles. And that's from research from Brian Heiderscheidt. And the new Maximalist shoes, you know, way faster than that even. So we approached a rubber manufacturer and said, we're looking for the following performance characteristics. We want something durable, flexible. And they said, but that's not how they make outsoles for running shoes. We went, yeah, we know. That's why we want to do it this way. So that's where that all came from.
Yeah. And also most of the barefoot shoes I've seen, first of all, they don't last as long, and having talked to a bunch of people who own them, and also they're a lot more expensive. They're often double the price of zero shoes. How is that possible?
I don't know. We built this company on this dumb idea that we would want to price things at a price that we would buy things at. So we wanted to make things affordable and long lasting. And it may not be the best way to make the most money, but we don't care because we want to do the right thing. Lena and I, we basically, when we built the company, we're thinking, how would we want a company to treat us if we were a customer? And let's just build it that way. So we know some people who have like no customer service for their businesses. We have customer service is the largest department in our company by a long shot. And so we think that's really important. And we just try to make things affordable. If we can't make it affordable, now that doesn't mean we don't have some products that are expensive. We have some products that are 150, 160 bucks. We have some new stuff coming out that might be a little more expensive, but those things have some crazy amazing materials and some super technical construction. But we're always doing it where, frankly, we're making as little as we can get away with to support a company that's growing as fast as we are.
Cool. And so if people are interested in picking up a pair of zero shoes, how do they go about finding you on the internet? Because we've been saying zero this whole time and it actually isn't spelled as you'd expect zero to be spelled.
Well, it's not too far off. It's X-E-R-O shoes. .com and we're at zero shoes or /zero shoes, wherever you happen to at or slash. But if you do accidentally, or if your computer makes you type in Z-E-R-O shoes, it'll still get to us. Thanks. Well, because I bought that domain and it now redirects to us. There's a whole story about that too. And also when you go to our website, if you look on the upper right, there's a store locator link and you can do a little search for your zip code and see if there's any stores near you that are carrying the product you're looking for. We're in about 500 stores around the world right now, but no store carries our entire product line, of course. And so if you see a local store, you just want to call them and check and see what they do or don't have.
Gotcha. We're going to start to wind down now. And before we do, one question, and then we'll hit a rapid fire round.
Okay.
Imagine that all knowledge on Earth is lost. You get to save the works of three teachers. Who would you choose and why?
Socrates. Maybe that's it. Okay. Richard Feynman, physicist.
Yeah.
Socrates, we got that one. See, then there's some debates about who actually lived and who didn't live and what they did or didn't say. So I'm trying to think if I can think of anyone else. Feynman replaces Einstein, by the way. I'm sticking on those two right now. That's all I can. Oh, no, you know what? I'm going to throw out another one for the fun of it. This is a toss-up. It's a toss-up between Nassim Taleb, who wrote Fooled by Randomness and The Black Swan, and Daniel Gilbert, who wrote a book called Stumbling on Happiness. Mm. And I'm going to give the synopses of both of those really quick. So Fooled by Randomness, the subtitle is The Hidden Role of Chance in Markets and Life. We massively overlook the role of luck, and we massively overlook what we can be responsible for and what we can or can't change. And that causes a lot of problems. Like the number one predictor of an entrepreneurial failure is a previous entrepreneurial success by that same person. Because they think, well, this idea that I have now feels just like one that I had before. The one I had before made a lot of money and it's all about me. So therefore, it's me. Usually not the case. And Daniel Gilbert, and he's got a great TED Talk, I can sum up with our brain, the number one thing it's trying to do is predict what'll make us happy in the future. And the future could be a minute from now, a split second from now, a year from now, at the end of our life. We're really, really bad at doing that and making that prediction. The only thing we're worse at is remembering how bad we are at it. And more, we think we're special little snowflakes, because if we interviewed a million people who got the thing that we think will make us happier, and we find out that they're not any happier or not happier than they were before they got it, we'd still go, yeah, but if I got it, I know no one who won the lottery is happier than they were before winning the lottery a year after they win the lottery. But if I won the lottery, and the value of knowing this is that when your brain then kicks up some idea of I'll be happy in some imagined future, you lose the ability to believe that either at all or quite so strongly. And ironically, that's the source of contentment, by not being attached to the idea that some imagined future is what you need to be happy. Mm-hmm. And so those two messages about what you can and can't do and the role of luck and how to not be seduced by what your brain naturally does to convince you that you need some other thing to be happy. Those are important lessons. So I'm going to throw both of those in as a twofer.
I love those. Okay, we'll go on to the rapid fire round now. What is overspeed training?
It's finding some way to run faster than you can on your own. So sprinting is primarily neurological. So if you teach your body to move faster than you can make it move on its own or of your own volition, because your body will often put limits on what you can do, the amount of effort you can put out, the amount of pain you're willing to endure, et cetera. So when it comes to sprinting, anything that can make you run faster, very slight downhill, very slight, or some way of pulling you. So there's a device called the 1080 Motion. It's basically a cable on a reel that's computer controlled, and you can attach it to the front of your body, go back 100 yards, and it'll pull you a little faster than you can run, or you can get my dog.
Any of those work?
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the footwear myths that we didn't cover in this?
More expensive is better. The research shows that that's not only not true, but also usually the exact opposite. That the shoes that big companies are putting out were developed by actual research that proves they're good for you. Oh, that pronation is a problem. The research shows that it's not. Pronation is a natural part of the spring mechanism of your body. If you look at professional marathoners, you'll often see that they pronate more than you ever would in a million years. Not a problem. One footwear researcher, a guy named Simon Barthold, used to be all anti-pronation, everything you need to do to prevent it. And then he no longer has that position. And you ask him why, he goes, the research. There's no correlation between pronation and injury.
Okay, if people are interested in this, where can they go to learn more about footwear and barefoot and this whole new paradigm?
New paradigm?
Oldest paradigm.
Thank you. If you go to our blog, zeroshoes.com/blog, so there's a blog post that I made that's actually just pointing to a paper that was written by Dr. Irene Davis, Dr. Daniel Lieberman, sorry, I've suddenly got the hiccups, and a number of other amazing researchers, that is called Stepping Back into Minimal Footwear, Applications Across the Lifespan. Now, you don't have to go to our website to find it, but it's a great place to find it. And I'm going to throw it in the chat for you, and you can put it in the show notes wherever you want. But that paper really walks through the whole story of how modern footwear is problematic and natural footwear can alleviate those problems. And the last page and a half or two pages is, I think, about 180 references to additional studies.
Wow. Okay. What area of your own health and performance are you currently working on?
Oh, that's, well, the most difficult one at the age of 60 is dropping about 5 to 7 pounds of body fat. That used to be, you know, just don't have pizza one night. And now, holy crap, man, it's a whole different story. I'm starting to work with a new sprinting coach who I really, really like him philosophically, because he basically looked at how people teach sprinting and was able to identify the things that are extraneous or counterproductive. And so my first batch of workouts from him will take, I can do them 3 days a week. I can do them like 5 days a week or 6 days a week, but he recommends three, and they take 15 minutes. And the entire amount of time that you're spending at maximum velocity is 60 seconds. And the warm-ups are not what you think of as normal warm-ups. It's not trying to, you know, get your body, it's getting your body primed to sprint. His technique he refers to as feed the cats. Is a guy named Tony Holler. And the idea is that sprinters are cats. They lie around, they're lazy. And then when they need to catch something, they're all out. And then when they're done, they lie down again. And so that's how you need to treat sprinters. You don't need to work them hard. You don't need to get them tired. You need to just get them primed so that they can just go. And then they stop. And then they rest, and then they do it again when they're ready. And so I'm really looking forward to that. Oh, and everything has to be timed because you need to see data. And so I literally just bought a brand new timing system to replace the one that I had that's a little more accurate for the kind of things that he wants to time. And I'm super, super excited about trying this whole new methodology.
Nice. Yeah, I find that cutting back how much time I spend exercising, particularly high intensity stuff, such as sprinting and those types of drills, has actually got me into better shape and normalized my hormones.
Oh, well, I don't know about my hormones, but I can tell you again, as an older guy, where you need more recovery in general anyway. You know the Nordic hamstring curl? Do you know that exercise? Yeah. So for people who don't, you kneel down, you have something or someone holding your feet down, and then you just try to lower your body with a little bit of hip bend as slow as you can. And if you're really strong, you pull yourself back up. So it's a eccentric hamstring exercise. I was working that like 3 days a week, and I just never got any better. And when I switched to 1 day a week, where I would just do five sets of five as best as I could, if I, you know, could only go 20 degrees and fall down, so be it. And I would just do the best that I could for, I'd do a set, rest for 2 minutes, do another set, rest for 2 minutes, et cetera. And now I can go all the way down, all the way back five times.
Wow. Okay, Stephen, what's one thing that your tribe does not know about you?
Holy crap. I'm kind of an open book. I used to make a living walking on broken glass in my bare feet. I was a street performer for a number of years, and that was the finale of my act. That was actually how I gathered a crowd. I had a big army blanket about 5 feet long with a giant pile of broken glass that I'd start arranging, and people would go, "What's that?" I go, "Oh, it's a pile of broken glass. I'm going to walk on this in my bare feet." And they would just go, "Sick." And they'd stick it. So that's how I'd build a crowd, and then I would build up to that. And that was what I did for a living for 5 years.
Any final thoughts? How would you like to end our episode together today?
It's simple. I'm going to toss out a couple ideas. One is, if you have any doubts or disbelief about some of the things that I said that are research-based, science, factual, I get it. But wonder where you got the conflicting belief. Just if you can track it back from who told you and who told them and who told them, it's eventually going to get tracked back to a shoe company that presented this idea to sell a product. And then if you ask them, where's the proof? You're going to find that it's not what you think it is. The second thing is, if you have doubts, again, that's cool. So did the almost 750,000 people who now wear Zero shoes until they tried them on. It's the experience that really is more important than what you believe. And when you have an experience that argues with what you believe, we tend to go with the experience because we just proved it to ourselves. And the interesting thing about this experience is that, you know, as ideas catch on, and the whole natural movement thing is catching on, as evidenced by the growth of our company and the other companies in this space, at a certain point, it hits critical mass where you see it around enough that even the doubters go, "Eh, well, I'll give it a shot." And that's when they have the experience of trying it, and they have that same like, "Oh my God, it's so lightweight, letting my feet spread, I feel the ground, it's like a foot massage," that's when things really take off. And I would argue that we're getting really, really close to that. So your doubt is actually an opportunity if you have doubts. And I'm just going to encourage you to give it a shot, because look, you don't have to go running in our shoes. You can walk in our shoes. And like we said, that has proven to be build foot strength. And when is weak better than strong? Never. So that strength will help you in whatever you're doing. So just walk around and, you know, do something casually that's good for you. And then you might find yourself running to the mailbox or running to get across the street or something and realize, "Oh, check that out." And then just, you know, take your time, have fun. Look, use fun as your guide post. I can spot a barefoot runner from 50 yards away. They have this weird look on their face. It's called smiling, that's what it is. And so use that. If you're not having fun, do something different till you are. And we always just like to say, and then live life feet first.
Yeah. And after hearing this, for all of you at home, you can start by just walking around the house barefoot, start acclimating to what it's like, letting your feet breathe and expand. They're not confined in shoes. And then after you pick up a pair of barefoot shoes, then give it some time. Don't expect to feel miraculous changes the first time you wear them, but a couple of weeks. And that's when I started to notice a difference for myself.
Yeah. Once you get used to doing what's natural, you just can't go back. You put on a quote normal shoe and it just feels so wrong because it is. And actually I'll leave one other thought. So I don't know when people will be listening to this, but as of right now, the schedule is that the beginning of December, Chris McDougall, who wrote the book Born to Run that catalyzed this whole natural movement idea and barefoot running and introduced many people to the Saturmara, he's got Born to Run 2 coming out with Eric Orton, his running coach. And that book is all about the practical version, how to actually do this, how to actually transition to running naturally, enjoyably and safely. And there's some great exercises there. There's going to be an app that goes along with it to show you how to do the exercises. And there's more to that than I'm allowed to say at the moment, but that's a good some place to start.
Okay. Stephen, I have to say that I'm actually a little disappointed because I have a whole closet full of shoes, most of which I never wear and probably never will wear now because I only cycle through a small select number of barefoot shoes.
Yeah, it's tricky because on the one hand, you want to sell them on eBay and make a few bucks. On the other hand, you don't want to give people crappy shoes.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I sold all of mine on eBay way back when.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for taking time to chat with us here on the podcast. And until next time, I'm Nick Urban here with Stephen Sashin signing out from mindbodypeak.com. Have a great week and be an outlier.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.